Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host, Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
We need to end the gridlock and to stop passing the buck to future generations.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
We, the individual voters, have to do something different. We have to hold those we elected accountable.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much. It is a Friday, and yes, indeed, Mayor Michael Bloomberg is in Studio 4. Good morning, sir.
We're here again another weekend, another Friday.
Another Friday. A long weekend.
This is a special one. Well, number one, it's a long weekend. We're going to have a Latino, a Hispanic Columbus Day Parade, an Italian Columbus Day Parade, Sunday and Monday.
You got your walking shoes on because you got lots
of parades. Parades are fun. It's the last day to register to vote. Another thing that's unique.
Here in New York.
Here in New York. And so if you want to complain, register. If you don't register to vote and don't complain. Because it's what separates us from the rest of the world. We have a democracy, and I've never understood people that don't want to go and exercise their franchise. It's the most wonderful thing. And it's the last weekend for the waterfalls.
I was wondering when the waterfalls get turned off. I must admit, I think that they've been a great asset for the summertime.
It's something different, and it just spreads the message around the world that New York is exciting and doing new things. And whether you like them or not, number one, it's great for tourism. It does bring a lot of people here, and that helps our economy. Number two, artist, the sculptor, Ólafur Eliasson, is half Icelandic, half Danish, but he has his studios in Berlin. And I was in Berlin on Sunday, and I went to his studios. This guy's a genius.
What happens? What do you do with a used waterfall?
Well, all of the materials are, recycled, but most of it's just structural stuff that you rent from a scaffolding company, and those things get used.
So he's not moving it someplace else?
No.
It's not going to be set up anywhere else.
It's like Christo and Jean-Claude. It's a one-time thing that will never be repeated and for a specifically defined place and time period. And everybody says, keep it going, I love it, or, whatever. That's not what artists do. That's the whole shtick isn't quite the right word, but that's part of the what makes it a unique piece of art. A painting goes on forever, and you can move it, and you can light it differently, and that sort of thing. These things, projects like this, the artist has a vision, you execute the vision for what exactly he or she or they had wanted, and then it's in your minds forever.
All right.
Now, there are pictures of them, so you can do that.
Exactly, and there'll be video as well. Also this weekend, and as you've already mentioned, the weather's going to be spectacular. There is a food festival.
It is going to be spectacular.
I was just waiting for you to take credit, Mr. Weatherman here. Food and Wine Festival, and to talk about it this morning, we've got Lee Schrager. He's the founder of the New York Wine and Food Festival and celebrity chef and well-known chef, Bobby Flay. Bobby, good morning.
Good morning.
Lee, good morning. Good to have you both here. Lee, how long has this been going on?
One night.
No, but I mean, is this the first year? Move that closer to you.
We started last night. Last night was the first night of the first annual Food Network.
Wait a second. I got to interrupt. That just occurred to me. Fats Domino lives in New Orleans, was here maybe a year and a half ago. I gave him an award, and he gave exactly the same kind of answer that you just gave. How long? One night. In his case, I said, Fats, how long are you going to be here? And he said, he's smarter than I am. Fats said, until I leave.
Okay. Now, were you just hanging around one night, and you said, "Let's have a wine and food festival."
That's it. I was just one night. Just said, "Let's."
Oh, I can see this interview is going a long way.
No, actually, we started the Food Network South Beach Wine and Food Festival 8 years ago, and it's always, it was a natural to bring, to the greatest culinary city in the United States, what we hope will be, one day the greatest wine and food festival.
No, and Bobby, you've been banging around here with food in New York City for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a native New Yorker, so, I mean, to me, having New York City as the backdrop for this food festival is so exciting. I mean, I think, and I think that the mayor will agree with me, that we have the best food in the world here in New York City, and such a great diversity, quality, at every price point. And to deliver, to get Lee to actually deliver this food and wine festival is, to me, it's a natural. And it seems like it's been here for a long time already. It's only been here for one night, and he's right about that.
Yeah, I've always argued that the best Japanese food is not in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. It's in New York. The best steaks aren't in the Midwest. They're in New York.
I totally agree
with
that.
The best Italian food isn't in Italy. It is here. Mm. And it's because we have so many people from around the world who live here. And the people that come here are people who are ambitious and do things. Mm. They don't just sit around. So if they're interested in going out to dinner, they have demands and they'll go any place to get good food. If they want to be in the business of producing food, they're willing to take risks and try new things. And we aren't ashamed of where we came from. We're willing to take anything. We're not so arrogant that we think we're the only ones with good ideas. You, restaurants, Bobby, one of the things that's always amazed me is how you guys combine food from lots of different places around the world.
Right.
And so you can have a kosher, Latino, Chinese restaurant.
It's sort of the UN of food.
Or one that's halal. Sure. And I'm sure there's plenty of exactly what I described.
Lee, tell me a couple of things that you have planned over there this weekend at Chelsea Pier.
Well, as I said, last night we kicked off with Bobby hosting a party at the Chelsea Market for around 1,500 people. This evening, Rachel Ray is hosting the Burger Bash over in Dumbo. We have 16 of the greatest burger chefs all throughout the United States doing a Burger Bash. Tomorrow evening, we have the world's biggest dessert party at the Exchange.
Not good for my waistline.
Not good for your waistline, Mayor, but we still hope you show up. 56 of the city's greatest pastry chefs, tastings, seminars, demos, panels, kids programming at Chelsea Market over
the
weekend.
Can people show up for these, or do you need tickets? I mean, how does it work?
Well, the majority of tickets are sold out already, but we're doing a whole series of free programming in the Meatpacking District this weekend. Lots of free kids programming, lots of panels, lots of blog panels. So you can show up. It's going to be a lot going on in the Meatpacking District, and who knows, you may pick up an extra ticket.
Is there a website or someplace people can get a schedule?
Is a website. It's up already. It's www.nycwineandfoodfestival.com, where you can click onto the Food Network.
You got to bring a sandwich right by there. The time you type all that
absolutely.
In.
There's also a phone number,
which I don't know.
Yeah, I do. That's what I mentioned.
That's why the mayor's here. That's exactly right.
My briefing paper, 866-969-2933. That's 866-969-2933.
All right, gentlemen, good luck to you. Sounds like a great program. Another New York City great program.
Thank you.
Great to see you.
Glad to be here.
Bobby, nice to see you again.
Bobby, we wish you all the best with your businesses here. And Lee, thank you so much for doing this here in our city. We're honored, and hopefully it'll be a big success, and you come back and do it every time.
We'll look forward to it. Thank you, Ms. Mayor.
Thank you, gentlemen. Well, appreciate you. It. Mr. Mayor, hang on. We'll get right back to you. Let me take care of a little business here. This portion of the program brought to you by Roundabout Theater Company's new Broadway production of Rodgers and Hart's musical Pal Joey. Performances begin November 14th, Studio 54. Tickets are found at roundabouttheater.org. Here we go, Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling and you here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. I guess we have to start with the economy. It is the
is that
only
interesting?
Thing.
Does anybody care about it?
I think, yeah, there are a few people out there that care. Your reaction to just another day of Wall Street and the Europeans and the Asians?
Well, it's very worrisome for everybody around the world. It's not a Wall Street problem or a New York or an American problem. It's not a developed world problem. The less developed world is having exactly the same problems. It is, to some extent, I think the ways to describe it is it's a crisis of confidence. There's plenty of money around. It's that nobody's willing to run the risk of parting with
it. Of doing anything with it, right?
You are starting to say, well, you know, the economy's bad. I won't go and buy that new car. That hurts the car dealer, hurts the manufacturer and its employees, hurts everybody down the chain. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that's as good an example. It's done at the level of the banks. They're worried that if they lend money, they might not get it back, and the credit agencies will reduce their rating, and therefore they won't be able to get money, and so that's that cycle. But right down at the person in the street level, all of us are getting more concerned. We've never seen anything like this. And the government can do economic things. And in fact, I had breakfast in London with Gordon Brown, and he said, what should you do? I said, you've got to get all of the European countries to act together, and then they've got to act together with the United States. I guess I had breakfast with him on Tuesday. And then I flew overnight, and when I get off the plane at 3 in the morning here, I find that he had done exactly that. All the European governments and the U.S. government got together, and they reduced their short-term borrowing rates. The trouble, of course, is that some people say, oh, things must be really bad if they're doing that, and they get more introspective and more conservative and less willing to part with their money. And in fact, you can make the case that at lower interest rates, why would you run any risk of loaning money? Because you're not going to get compensated for it. At a higher interest rate, you might, in fact, do it.
And so the Fed lowered the rate by half a point?
Absolutely. I mean, and at some point in time, interest rates are so low that if you lower them anymore, it just shows weakness. It doesn't accomplish anything. Generally, you lower rates to make it cheaper to borrow money so people go and buy a house, buy a car, companies build a new plant, and that sort of thing. That's not happening here. With lower rates, people aren't going out and doing that.
It makes them more nervous, as you were saying.
It may very well. It certainly is true that they're not going out and doing anything. For all of the efforts of our government and other governments around the world, what is clearly true is that the credit markets are fundamentally closed tight, and that hasn't changed in the last few days. And then you see the U.S. markets collapsing yesterday, European and Asian markets collapsed today. European markets are off 38-40, close to 40%. U.S. markets are 33-34%. Some of the Chinese markets are off 65%.
Russians suspended
TFA. And today, I love this, Putin announced that on Monday they're going to spend $6.5 billion buying stocks. You know, they just don't understand the way markets work. They'll wind up owning a lot of stocks at fancy prices that aren't worth anything. They should go fix their problems. Iceland, as a country, could go bankrupt. Iceland has this tiny country. I think they're something like 300,000.
320,000 people.
Okay. And they have been a major supplier of funds to not the United States, but to the Scandinavian countries and to Europe. And so when Iceland's banks get into trouble, it's the banks in the rest of that part of the world and to the east that get in trouble. My concern is New York City. That's what I'm here to work on. I've spent a lot of time with Mark Page, who runs our Office of Management and Budget, and making sure that New York City, if we can't go to borrow money, which we do all the time, you borrow and you repay, you borrow and you repay, you refinance. It's just enormous, complex number of transactions take place all the time. If the credit markets are totally closed to municipalities, and they're not quite, we've still been able to finance a little bit, as have a few other places. But I want to make sure we have enough money, and number one, we do, to go a few months, and nobody thinks that that wouldn't be enough. So we've been very prudent in terms of keeping cash for an emergency. That's nothing to do with whether we can afford anything. It's simply, do you have the cash in the bank, or do you have to go out and borrow it? The second thing is, do we have any exposure to any of these banks? If we use them to guarantee our debt, which is a common practice, what happens if they're not around? And so far, we have variable rate notes, which are somewhat similar to auction rate notes, but there's a bank that stands there to buy them back. If the banks go out of business for a few months, we're fine, but eventually we would have to buy it back, and that's part of the deal to get a lower interest rate. Those banks that we've used are all okay, and we don't have a lot of exposure to any one of them in case they weren't okay. Very prudent in spreading the risk around. So from a cash flow point of view, the city's in good shape. Our tax revenues, we've projected 12% down for the year we're in. We're a quarter of the way into this fiscal year. So far, tax revenues are running pretty much on schedule, maybe a touch worse. The trouble is that it's in the fourth quarter when you really would expect, when a lot of taxes come in, so you really don't know yet. And the state has an even bigger problem because they get even more in the fourth quarter, I think, but certainly they don't have what we have in terms of property tax. So, you know, do we have enough money? Yes. Is it going to be difficult? Make no mistake about it. We have to find alternative revenue sources and reduce our expenses. We've gotten submissions back from all the agencies. I asked them to identify a 2.5% cut in addition to the 5% cut that we have going this year already, another 2.5% for the last 6 months of this year. year, which would mean January through June, and then another 5% cut on top of all of this for starting next July 1st. They've submitted them to Mark Page. He's now got to go through them. Some things I'll say, no, you're cutting something that is just too important to the city. Some things I'll say, you should cut this because I know it may be popular, but in the grand scheme of things, given the absolute necessities.
That's 12.5% over a
well, if our revenues
year.
Are down,
right.
John, you know, that's the real world, and we're going to do it. What we're not going to do, however, is to walk away from keeping the streets clean and safe. We're not going to walk away from educating our kids. We're not going to walk away from helping those who really need help. We're not going to walk away from our cultural institutions and parks. Those are the things that get people to come here and keep us having a future. And we cannot afford not to. We also have to continue to make investments in these big infrastructure projects because you still have to deal with the sewage and provide water and the bridges have to carry and all that. Where do we stand? I think we're in decent shape, and I don't want anybody to panic. I also don't want anybody to think that it is going to be easy. This is going to require choices, which are never fun. If you lose in the choice, you're on the steps of City Hall. If you win, you don't stand up and say thank you and help me fight the others. But we're going to be in all of this together. We're going to get, I think we'll get great cooperation from the union leaders, or most of them in the city. They understand it's their city. Their kids go to the schools. They live in the city and want safe streets. They know that their future depends on a good economy. There'll be some that don't, but generally we'll work on this together. Look, we got through, when I came into office, $5 and $6 billion deficits. Wasn't easy. I remember one year doing parades was very difficult. May have had something to do with the smoking ban as well, but nevertheless. And we'll get through this again. We have to sit back and say, what can we afford and what can we can't? And nobody ever wants to cancel anything, but that's not realistic.
All right, I've got two questions. Number one, we are actually running a commercial for New York City general obligation bonds,
yep,
which are triple tax free. I mean, that would seem to me to be a pretty good investment these days.
I think that the city has highest credit rating it's maybe ever had, and we're acting prudently. I think it'd probably be against the law for me to say anything other than that. I think I'd forget the laws, okay. But I would assume that it would be I can't go out and try to sell bonds.
Right.
But the city will do, you know, when you sell bonds, you want to advertise, and that's what we're going to do.
The other question is New York City pensions and the effect of the Wall Street drop on those.
It's hard to believe that any pension fund in this country hasn't had similar performance to the broad market. They generally are big enough so that no matter how they pick stocks, whether they just buy bunches of stocks or individual stocks, they're so big that they have to mirror the market. And they can be a little bit better, a little bit worse, but fundamentally they would all go the same. The bond market has also been a problem for a lot of them. And to the extent that they have diversified, a lot of pension funds around the country said, oh, you know, you don't understand. It's a new era. We have to be in hedge funds. We have to be in private equity. We have to be in all these alternative sources of revenue, own mortgage securities and write loan securities for short sellers and write credit default swaps. And I don't know how to break this to you. Nobody's ever invented perpetual motion. And the old rules of being reasonably conservative, particularly with pension funds, diversifying, borrowing long and lending short rather than the reverse, understanding what you own, seeing whether it's prudent for the kind of monies that you have. It's one thing to take your entertainment money and go to a casino. If you want to do that, I personally never had any great interest, but that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. It's as good a ways as if you buy a ticket to something, and if you enjoy it, great. But you don't take the rent money and do that. Pension funds shouldn't be taking the monies that they have put aside to take care of the pensionees in doing that. Most have not. Incidentally, New York City pension funds, and I think the state as well, are reasonably conservative and very well run. They're fully funded, not like other states where they've skimped and haven't put the money in. I mean, we have, give credit where credit's due. The pension funds in the city and the pension funds in the state are in good shape. But their performance has got to be way down like everybody else's, 35-odd percent. And when they say, well, it's not because our private private equity stuff. Private equity stuff, you can't measure the value of it in the short term. But let me tell you, it's worth the same as the stock market. When the stock market goes down, it goes down.
I know the mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, cannot predict the future, but historically, this thing has dropped off the charts pretty darn quickly. Do you think that when the bottom is finally met, when that confidence comes back, it goes up at an equal rate?
There's an old Wall Street saying, they don't ring a bell at the bottom. And some parts of the world will not do so poorly. Some will come out of it quicker. Some will come out of it stronger. Some weaker. It's a conglomeration of things, and it's not going to be easy or quick. And then what I think what you're seeing here, John, nationwide, certainly in this country, and to some extent overseas, elected officials have been unwilling to say, we don't have everything we want. You're going to have to pay for things. It's either or. And if you want a financial crisis in America, I don't think you could pick a worse time, close to an election where both candidates are out there trying to win votes and nobody really wants to deliver bad news. I think both would say, oh, I'm out there delivering the bad news. But in all fairness to them, that's just not the way campaigns are run. Congress is unwilling to face the tough issues of public education and health care costs and crime in the streets and immigration. All of these things add up. And it comes to a confidence the public has. You know, when you read these polls that the public doesn't like Congress. You know, they get a lower rating.
10%.
Something like that. Everybody says, so what? This is the so what. They don't have, the public doesn't have the confidence that the leaders and the rank and file in the legislatures at every level of government are going to stand up and bite the bullet. And so they sort of deep down in their minds say, you know, I don't know that we have the leadership. And whoever gets elected, and I don't know who it's going to be, but it's in, you know, not many weeks.
It's going to be one of two guys. Right?
It's, well, there's Ralph Nader's in it as well.
That's true.
It's one of three. And the probably other candidates, you know, there's always these fringe things, you know.
Somebody, right.
They're going to have to lead Congress. They're going to have to pull Congress together. And I think that is the key characteristic that you should look for in the president, because president's got to have a vision. President's got to give uplifting speeches and rally the public and give them confidence. But when push comes to shove, after all of that, it is Congress that passes the law. And the president's got to get both sides to work together and pass a law. And if you go back to what happened with the bailout bill of $700 billion, where they turned it down when everybody knew that we had to have it, stretched it out, which did great damage to everybody's confidence in the financial system, then came back and finally did it and had to add on $150 billion in tax breaks and perks to get the votes to do it, that doesn't give you a lot of confidence that they're going to stand up in the future and face the tough decisions. And if they're not, why would you have great expectations? You might as well just put your money, not in a mattress, but be more conservative. Overseas, there are similar kinds of things. Governments that have coalitions, hard to put together, squabbling all the time. I don't know that you and I could do any better. And I do think that Hank Paulson's the right guy for the Treasury, and I think Geithner here in the city. And
but it comes back to what you were just saying.
The president's got to give a great speech. Congress has got to stand up.
The president is scheduled to do that at 10 o'clock this morning. We will wait and see how that turns out. We've gone very long on this important conversation. Let me take a break on the half hour. We'll be looking to you for your questions at 800-321-0710 in a couple of moments. But here, it's now 24 before 9. Some news from Joe Bartlett. All right, we continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on a Friday John Gambling Show. Let's see here, 18 minutes before 9 o'clock. The term limits issue. Headlines while you were in Europe and continuing.
Were they really?
Yes, you probably didn't read about them, didn't hear about them. But where are you at this point?
The city council is considering a number of bills, one of which would change term limits from 2 to 3, not end them, but change them from 2 to 3. And if that bill is passed, I would sign the bill. And my expectation would be to run for a third term next November, a year from now. I don't know whether the bill is going to be passed, and I don't know that I would get reelected, but I've spent all my life working on all of this. I've training for this kind of a job, and we've got so many things going. I think that it will be tough to keep them, but we can keep them going and can keep the city, and I'd be honored if the voters would give me the opportunity to do that. But all this really does, John, is give the public more choice, and I find it fascinating. Those who are arguing against it argue against it because they will have competition, which they didn't want. You know, competition's good for everybody, and there's no reason to think that the public doesn't get a have more choice that then they'll make better selections.
If indeed the law is passed by the city council, we hear talk of this being a temporary situation and not necessarily a permanent situation.
There are a lot of people who think that the law should be changed, but that it should not be changed by the city council. It should be changed by a public referendum. The city charter can be changed three ways, all of which have equal state status. The state legislature can always change the city council, the city charter, because we're a creature of the state. These referendums can change it, and the city council can change it. It's too late in the election cycle because of the way the law is written to have a referendum. So if it's going to be changed, and the state doesn't seem to have any interest in doing so, if it's going to be changed, it could be changed by the city council. And there are people who say, well, we have a unique situation here and the economy's coming apart. And while a new person, I'm the first one to believe that you should periodically make changes. There's nothing magical of 8 or 12. Nobody's ever survived more than 12. So a cynic would say, well, you don't need term limits because the public throws people out after three terms or convinces them
not
to run.
Or
ready or not, sure. But in this case, there is a unique situation. And if people believe that, then they'll vote that way a year from November. And if they don't, they don't. But the question of bringing it to the public, I've said I will form a charter commission and ask them to look at it and put something on the ballot so the public has the say. They can't do it before this November, but they would be able to do it, and it would take a it would be on the ballot not next November, 2 Novembers from now, and then they could either keep it at the 3, which is what the city council would change it to, or move it back to 2, and that sort of gives everybody what they want. The public has the final say in the election for mayor. The public has the final say on term limits, although the city council, I suppose, could come back. And the public gets the chance to it's those two things, you know, more choice this time and the public having a say. And there are other ways you could do it, but this is the ways that it looks like it'll get done.
Do you think the court challenges have merit?
This has been pretty much litigated. There was a case when my first term, which I actually vetoed, city council changed the charter then on term limits, and it went to court, and the court says they have a perfect right to do it. So no, I think most lawyers would say it would be unlikely that the courts, you never know, but unlikely the courts would deny the public the option of picking whoever they want.
It was either last Friday or the Friday prior we were talking about the memorial at the World Trade Center. And that you had gotten guarantees from the PA that it would be there 10 years later.
It would substantially be there. Underground, certainly not.
Correct.
And there are parts of it that will be constantly having to be ripped up and put back while they do the build underneath. But we wanted the plaza level done for the 10th year anniversary. I think it will get done. Chris Ward and
he says he's going to close it down after the open.
Well. It's to have the ceremony then, and then if parts of it are closed, my hope is they wouldn't close the whole plaza.
Okay.
You'd still be able
that
you could
really
walk around construction. I mean, that's the real world. We'll have to live with that. Am I happy about it? Absolutely not. But I think the practical aspects are this is the most phenomenally complex construction project maybe ever done, and we can sit around and wring our hands and we can yell and scream, but that doesn't get it done any better or faster or more economically. Number one, the first thing that Chris Ward, no matter what promises he or the chairman of the Port Authority make, or the two governors, they have to do it safely. I don't care what this, no matter what promises, we cannot lose any more lives. We lost two firefighters tragically in the Deutsche Bank building. Construction's dangerous. You probably will have with all of this accidents, but we've got to do everything we can to keep it from happening. Number two, we've got to do it right. I don't care what promises. It's doing the right thing, because that's what really lasts. Nobody's going to remember the yelling and screaming down the road. They got to look back and get the message of what happened and what the terrible price society paid and why it happened and how do we prevent it again. And then lastly, there is the real world of economics and getting it done. And, you know, nobody wants it done more. My hope is that we will, on September 11th, 2011, be able to assemble on the plaza with the two voids with running water and names around them, with a plaza with an awful lot of the trees, maybe not all of them, but an awful lot of the trees, be able to get there reasonably, and don't have to get there from every side. We'll live with partial. And then over the next couple of years, while they continue, that they do everything they can to keep most of it open most of the time.
All right. We've got to make some room here for our telephone calls, which we will do in a second. One final question, and your reaction, Mary Peters, Transportation Secretary, enforcing the auctioning of the slots into New York City airports.
This is a woman who's come through for New York time after time. She offered us $354 million to institute a ways to get money for mass transit and reduce the pollution that's killing us, and we turned it down, but she was there. She's come through with a plan to try to ameliorate the terrible delays at our airports, which is choking our economy. Everybody else just complains. There's nothing anybody likes. They all want to do something, but it's never the right thing. Mary Peters has got a good idea. And letting big planes come in, which carry more people rather than small planes. I know the politicians yell and scream, well, small cities won't have access.
You got everybody
not,
in Congress, local
not,
representatives.
They're not going to have access. They don't have it anyplace else. They're not going to have it. That's just the truth of the matter. There are feeder airports. They can fly to Republic. They can fly to Stewart. They can fly to
MacArthur.
But the bottom line is the big airports should be there to take care of the big needs. And if we don't, we're not going to have a tax base. People won't have their businesses here. We have, in the middle of a sunny day without a lot of wind, hour delays or two-hour delays at our airports. This is insanity. And this business of, I want it done, and they go out. Actually, the politicians have the nerve to go out and complain about it. And then, of course, whenever anybody does anything, oh, no, not that thing.
All right. I'm glad I asked you something you didn't have an opinion on. Hang on. We'll go to the phones, get you involved here. Traffic may be slow, as it is around New York City, but speaking of airports, airport security can be fast. Get Clear. It's the card that speeds you through airport security. In mere minutes, you visit flyclear.com. All right, here we go. We continue now, 6 before 9 o'clock. Joan Hamburg in just a little bit. Mr. Mayor, we got a bunch of folks on the line here. Alvin, somebody, I need some headphones for the mayor, please. Thank
you
very
much.
Well, I'm not sure. Is it plugged in?
Right here.
Does it work? Can you hear me through there? No, I didn't think so. Hang on. Just plug that one in. Let's go go to the telephone here. No, you got to go over here. Take that one, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, okay, got it.
Our technical staff in great shape here. All right, Jeremy, you're going to be first. I'm sorry. Let me go to number three, Tom in Queens. Tom, you're with John and the mayor. Go.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
I was just wondering, as a constituent who has witnessed the reports of a lot of your travels around the country and around the world through a good part of your second term, I was just wondering, was it a case that you felt you weren't either smart enough, healthy enough, or interested enough that caused you not to run for president?
Good question,
I think, Tom.
Let's get an answer to that one. I can't wait to hear
that. I think the honest answer is I didn't think I could win. If I thought I could have won, maybe you would have done it. But just in a three-way race where certain percentage of people will always vote Democratic, certain percentage always vote Republican, you have to get an enormous percentage of the middle, and that's not possible.
Right.
But we have two good candidates, and people can pick.
All right, Gina, you're next with the mayor. Get right to your question, please.
Yes, certainly. Mayor Bloomberg, I'm thrilled to death that you're going to run again. I've been voting since 1961, and you are the best that we've had in the city.
Now, let me point out that Gina is not a cousin, not my mother or my daughters. Tina, I don't know whether I'm going to run again because I don't know what the city council will do. But if they pass the bill, I will sign it. And I plan to run again. And I'd be honored if the people would consider me. And, you know, I think that we have so much to do and there's so many things right about us. And we got to be very careful here. We're going to have some very tough times. We also shouldn't walk away from the fact that this is the greatest country. And we do have a great future. It's going to be tough to get there, but we're going to do it.
Yeah, a couple of rough parts of the road come of potholes is the word I am looking for, and not doing very well as I'm looking at the screen here. Jeremy in Brooklyn, you've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg's ear. Jermaine, I'm sorry. Jermaine?
Hello. Good morning. My name is Jermaine Lewis, and I'm calling from Brooklyn. I live with my mother. Her name was Ann Lewis, and she passed away a few months ago, and it's been very, very painful for me.
What's your question?
Sometimes I feel I can't take it anymore. I can't take the pain anymore.
But Jermaine, do you have a question for the mayor?
I know that I need help dealing with my issues, and I don't know who to ask for.
Okay, Jermaine, if you stay on the line, we'll get your phone number, and we'll try to get somebody to call and see if we can help you.
I'm going
to
put you
and
on.
And we're sorry about your mother.
Absolutely. So let me go to Paul in Medford. Paul, you're with John Gambling and the mayor.
Thank you, sir. It's an honor to speak with you. I'm wondering about the bank situation and the reason. I've heard this, haven't heard this asked on any of the radio stations, even with their respected guests. Is it possible that the banks are not lending to each other because there's no way for them to find out whether they're solvent or whether they're going to be taken over by the FDIC?
That is one of the key issues, although it's much more true with the big banks, Paul. When you don't know how to value the securities you own, which is true of what they call these toxic things, they may be worth a lot of money. It's just a lot of computer modeling, and the underlying data is guessing how many people are going to default on their mortgages and get foreclosed on their houses, and nobody really knows. Once you don't know what the bank owns, because the bank doesn't know itself or what it's worth, then people say, well, I don't know if they're going to be solvent. And it feeds on itself. And so that was the idea of the $700 billion plan, which is not the only thing we need. But the idea was to get those off the bank's books, or at least give the banks the feeling that they could sell it if they want to. That would give the public confidence. Public would then say, okay, I will buy those bank stocks, or I won't pull my money out of the banks, and other banks will loan to them. And what's happening here is people, small banks, we think this is a big bank problem. The real danger for this country is the small banks all across the country that loan you money for your mortgage or that loan you money to help your store fix itself up or hire another employee and do a little bit more business. Those are the banks that people are worried about. They're pulling their money out of it and, say, maybe putting it into a bigger bank. Well, the local banks are the fundamental part of our society. Now, you know, we talk about Wall Street, but in the end, it is you getting a car loan, you getting a student loan, you getting a mortgage on your house, or the guy you want to sell your house to getting a mortgage. It's your local store being able to borrow $25,000. They don't borrow billions of dollars. Our economy is built on the $25,000.
Interesting, Jody Rell, Governor Rell of Connecticut.
A smart woman.
Well, she did just that yesterday. She got the local banks in Connecticut and got them all together and said, hey, guys, we have to do something here to help the people.
The trouble is, you know, it's not a city problem. It's not a state problem. It's maybe not even a federal problem. It's a world problem. But each of us have got to do something. Most of this is going to be done at the federal level of providing the confidence. We need the leadership. It's a crisis of confidence. The economics are one thing. We have a good Treasury Secretary. I've said this again and again and again. I think Kang's great, and he's the right guy at the time. But in the end, it's that you don't trust things. If you trusted them, you create your own reality, and you don't have to worry about it. So somebody says, look, the stock is going down. There must be fire where there's smoke. I'm going to take my money out of that bank. The rating agencies say, oh, my goodness, maybe people are going to take their money out. I better reduce the ratings because Congress has criticized them. And it all sort of builds and feeds on itself. And we've got to get together, and we need leadership to do it, and say, look, this country has a future, and we're going to face our issues. One of the callers that was going to call, we didn't get a chance to talk to him, said, well, should you cut Medicare and Medicaid and all these things? We're going to have to make a decision as to how we pay for health care. And so far, all we do is we keep passing bills that give people things. Now we're talking about another stimulus package. The last one, we bought a whole bunch of flat-screen TVs. That wasn't exactly building jobs here. Infrastructure is where the money should go.
And they want to do it again.
And I understand that.
We'll save that for for next Friday. How's that? Have yourself a fine weekend. Enjoy your parades over the weekend. Mayor Michael Bloomberg will be with us next Friday. We hope we'll see you come Monday. Columbus Day will be here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
You just heard it. News Talk Radio got bigger and better.